Well, good morning. I'm so glad that I got to be invited back here to teach in Midtown. And it's just a blessing to be able to worship here with you. My name is Marty Scott, and here at Grace, I get to be the global outreach pastor. And that is only half of my job, though. The other half of my job is I help run our Fellows program. So if you don't know, our Fellows program, it is a two-year program after graduation in which our Fellows experience full-time ministry and take different classes and those sort of things. And I love getting to be a part of that class because I get to see them grow and learn and just see what God is calling them towards. The other benefit of being part of the Fellows program is I have a lot of tacos and coffee with our Fellows, and I love tacos and coffee, so it's a perk of my job. About a year ago, one of our Fellows, Dylan, we were talking about getting coffee, and we found out that I had never been to his favorite coffee shop, and so we decided that we would go and we'd visit his favorite coffee shop. So we drove out there and we got there and we're waiting in line and he looks over at the pastry shelf and there's these two big blueberry muffins in this pastry shelf and he says, Marty, those blueberry muffins will change your life. And I was like, Dylan, man, they're blueberry muffins. He's like, yeah, but they're life-changing blueberry muffins. And so being one to not pass up an opportunity for life-changing blueberry muffins, we ordered both of them and sat down and we started to eat them. And the whole time I'm eating this muffin, he's just like staring at me, waiting for something to happen. And I don't know if it was like that my face would glow or what, but he's just staring at me. And so I ate some of this blueberry muffin. And finally, I just looked at him and I said, man, it tastes like a blueberry muffin. And he was just crushed. And he was like, well, they must have changed the recipe or something. And it was like, all right. But the reality is, it's foolish to buy a blueberry muffin expecting to find life. It's crazy to walk in through the door of a coffee shop and think that this morning I'm going to get a muffin and a cappuccino that are going to bring life change to me. And yet so often I think that we are guilty of pursuing life, pursuing abundant life through things that were never meant to actually give us abundant life. We're guilty of pursuing life through through relationships, through our work, through things like houses and cars, and if you're a little kid, through toys, but we pursue life in all the wrong things. And what we'll see is that this morning, Jesus claims that life is found exclusively through him and him alone. Jesus is gonna make a claim this morning, and it's, I am the door. And when he says, I am the door, what he is saying is that he alone grants access to the abundant life offered to us by God. That Jesus alone grants access to the abundant life offered us by God. We have been studying the I am statements of God, and this morning we'll be looking at I am the door from John 10, 7 through 10. In order to understand this statement, we're going to be looking at the context of his claim. We'll be looking at the benefits of his claim and the exclusivity of his claim. So it'll be up here on the screen, but if you have your Bibles, turn to John 10, 7 through 10. It's four verses, so we're actually going to be bouncing all over the Bible today. So if you have it, just keep it out here this morning. But John 10, 7 through 10, it says this. Jesus again said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, all who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy, but I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. The first thing we want to look at is the context of his claim. You see, Jesus is going to develop this picture around a sheepfold. And he builds the context of this sheepfold from the previous six verses, verses 1-6. And in those verses, he says this, "Truly I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice." And here Jesus is setting the scene. He's painting this rural, pastoral picture of this sheepfold and everything that goes on around a sheepfold like this. And he's going to set this scene in verses 1-6, and then he's going to teach off of this scene to make two points. The first point he's going to make is, "I am the door." And the second point he is going to make is, "I am the good shepherd." And so in this scene, you'll have a sheepfold, and you will have a shepherd, and you'll have sheep, and you have thieves and robbers, and you have a doorkeeper and a door. And this is all built into this scene. But at no point in this scene that he sets does he make any claims. And so he finishes this up, and everybody's just kind of standing at there staring at him. And they don't understand what he's saying. And so then he's going to move into those claims of, "I am the door and the good shepherd." And these are two separate claims that he's going to make. And this morning we're looking at the door. When you think about the door, there's kind of two ways to look at this. One is, if you look at our picture, there isn't a door. And so there are writings and examples of times where the shepherd would lay in this gap, or he would sit in this gap or sleep in this gap, and the shepherd was acting as a door. And so it's not a literal door, but it is a figurative door where the shepherd is acting as the door. The other way to view it is that I just got the wrong picture, and that there's actually sheepfolds that have doors on them. And this is kind of supported by verse 3, where it says, "To him the gatekeeper opens." And so you see in there, there's this gatekeeper standing there. And so presumably, there's also a gate. Either way, whether it's a shepherd acting as a door or a literal physical door, what matters is what a door does. A door is a barrier that grants access into and out of a given area. And so in this case, it is a door that grants access for the sheep into the sheepfold and out into the pasture. I don't know a lot about sheep. As a pastor, over the years, I've heard about sheep based on people preaching sermons about sheep, and that's pretty much it. But what I do know about are chickens. My family, we have backyard chickens, and it turns out, as I was prepping for this sermon, I would go out and look at the chickens, and they are a lot like sheep. You see, we have a chicken coop, and we have a chicken run, and that is the chicken's area, and there's a gate in that area. We also have a black lab who is trained in retrieving birds, and Ivy, our lab, does not differentiate between chickens and ducks and dove, and so the chickens have learned that when they are inside the chicken run and the coop, inside of the gate, they're safe. Ivy cannot get to them. The problem with that area is they have turned it into mud and dirt and chicken poop. And so it's this nasty kind of area. But on the other side of the fence is my lawn. And 8 months out of the year, my lawn is lush and green, and the chickens just stare at it because they want out into the green lawn where there's green grass and green weeds and insects and all those different things. And so sometimes we'll put Ivy up and we'll open up the gate for the chickens, and they rush out in the lawn and just live their best life, right? And they'll scratch around and eat all the bugs. And then in the evening, they come back through the gate and they go back into the chicken coop where it is safe for them. And this is what's happening in this scene that Jesus is setting up. The sheep are able to find safety and security inside of the sheepfold. And the door is how they access that. And then the sheep are able to find sustenance and satisfaction out in the pasture. And the door is what opens up out to that. And so for the sheep, these are the two benefits of the door, is it allows them access in and allows them access out. And so the question for us is then, what are the benefits of the door for us as believers. And so to understand the benefits of Jesus's claim that I am the door, we want to look back at verses 7 through 10. And I believe in verses 7 through 10, here we go. I always break this thing. Jesus is making parallel claims here in verses 8 through 10. And you'll see it because he's going to go from the negative to the positive both times. So he goes from the negative to the positive. In verse 8, we see all who came before me are thieves and robbers. And then he moves into the positive. He will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture if you go through the door. And then in verse 10, he goes back to the negative. The thief comes to steal and kill and destroy, but I have come that they may have life and have it abundantly. Jesus is presenting that the access that he grants us to, that he gives us, is abundant life. And he's going to describe that by the other positive, that we'll be saved and we'll go in and out and find pasture. So we believe that the benefits of his claim are abundant life. And that abundant life comes across as salvation. We're brought into the flock of sheep, if they're called a flock, I think they are, the fold. But then also there's security that we get to go into this sheepfold. And then there's satisfaction and sustenance that we're let out into the pasture to find life, to find that which sustains us. Now, when you view these things, security, satisfaction, sustenance, we can begin to view it as this physical benefit for us, that that God is going to give us security and that we won't get sick, that we won't experience pain and hardship, that if we're sick, that he'll heal us. And we can begin to view satisfaction and sustenance as he gives us all the things that we want, the desires of our heart. And this begins to look a lot like what we call the health and wealth gospel. And the health and wealth gospel is this view of abundant life that says, if you are faithful enough, that if you believe enough and pray enough, God is going to lavish you with all of these good gifts, like a new house. And if you pray enough, this new car, and that you won't get sick and you won't suffer any of these things. And the problem with this view of abundant life that we get in John 10 is that a few chapters later, John's going to say something totally different to his followers. In chapter 14 and 15, he's going to say that if you are following me, they are going to persecute you. That those who are obedient to me, that the world, that in the world, you will have tribulation. See, later on in John, he begins to promise that you're going to suffer. You're going to be persecuted. You're going to have tribulation. And this is truly what happened to all of those disciples. They were beat. They were exiled. They were martyred. And yet they walked in obedience. And so how do we begin to balance an idea of abundant life with a promise of persecution and suffering? I think Paul does this beautifully in the book of Philippians. Philippians was written from prison. And so Paul is sitting there in jail, and surely as he's sitting there in jail, he's not experiencing health and wealth. And yet what we see in Philippians is that Paul is experiencing total contentment. If you turn to chapter 4 of Philippians, and I'll have it up on the screen too, Paul is going to say, not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Paul makes it clear that his circumstances do not dictate his contentment. His circumstances do not dictate his contentment because his contentment is found in Jesus Christ alone. And if this is true, then our experience of abundance, abundant life, just like Paul's experience of contentment, our experience of abundant life is not conditional upon our circumstances. we can experience abundant life, whether we're healthy or whether we are sick. We can experience life in wealth, and we can experience abundant life in poverty. And this is because abundant life is not found in whatever circumstance we're in. Abundant life is found in who we go to, no matter what circumstance we find ourselves in. Who do we go to in any and all circumstances? Abundant life is the result of a deep and abiding relationship with the Father. And Jesus is the door that allows us to enter into a relationship with the Father. Jesus is the door that allows us to abide with the Father. Jesus is the door that allows us to dwell with the Father. And Jesus is the door that brings us into fellowship with the Father. And these are all these themes that John is going to build on throughout his gospel. Jesus brings us into a relationship with the Father, and it is in this relationship that we find security. It is in this relationship that we find satisfaction. And this is because God will provide what he knows we need, not what we think we need, and not what the world tells us that we need. A few years ago, and this happens every once in a while in the fellows program, I was asking one of our fellows to lead a trip for the summer, and she was really excited to be able to lead this trip. And through our conversation about leading a trip, she said, "Hey, I'm really pumped about this trip, but I have one request. Can I not lead with that person?" And I paused and I looked at her and I just said, "Man, you really shouldn't have told me that. Because now you're going to get to lead with that person." And it's not because I'm mean and this jerk that just wants to make you do the things that you don't want to do. It's because I recognize that, first off, our fellows program is a development program, and you come into this program to be developed and to grow. And I recognize that probably the most development and the most growth that you're going to experience in this program is when you're stepping into those things that you don't want to do. When you're stepping into the things that are challenging, that are hard, that you generally want to avoid. And it's because in the midst of those challenges, in the midst of those hard relationships, that you begin to turn to the Lord for strength, that you turn to the Lord for patience, that you turn to the Lord to love those who are harder to love. And this is abundant life, that in the midst of the storm, we turn to God as our anchor. In the midst of the battle, we turn to God as our strong fortress. In the midst of needs, in the midst of pain, we turn to God as our portion and our inheritance. It's there that we begin to lean on God as our abundant life. And the problem is sometimes we're not experiencing these things in the midst of pain, in the midst of hardship, and it's because we're turning to other things to experience life. But life is found exclusively and only through the access that Jesus grants us. So the next point is this, that Jesus is making a claim of exclusivity. That life is found exclusively through him. Now, how do we know this? Well, it's because when we look at our sheepfold, there's one door, right? That was supposed to be cute. You know, that's not actually how we know this. We know this because of the context of this passage. If you go back to John 10, John 10 is Jesus teaching about something that occurred in John 9. See, in John 9, you have this long story, and we're not going to read all of John 9, but I'm going to summarize the story, this long story of this man who is born blind, but now he can see. And so Jesus' disciples, they look over and they see this man who is blind, and they say, "Jesus, why is this guy blind?" And Jesus talks and interacts with his disciples over his blindness, but eventually he calls this man over and he spits onto the ground and he makes some mud and he puts it on this guy's eyes and he tells him to go and wash. And he does this all on the Sabbath, which you know who that's going to upset, right? The Pharisees are not going to like this. So Jesus leaves the scene, and this man, he goes and he washes. And what takes place for the rest of chapter 9 is this interaction between the man who was born blind but then can see with the Pharisees who can see but are progressively shown to be spiritually blind. And so the man who's born blind is brought before the Pharisees and they say, hey, what happened? And he says, well, I was born blind and now I can see, and it was Jesus. And they say, look, there is no way that it was Jesus because he's a sinner who did things on the Sabbath. You can't perform a miracle on the Sabbath if it's sinful. And the guy's like, I don't know. It was Jesus. And so they say, you must be lying. You must not have been born blind. So they call his parents. His parents come up and they say, yeah, that's our son. He was born blind. We don't know how it happened. You're gonna have to ask him. And so they bring him back in and they question him again. And the guy's like, look, never in the history of the world, never has someone been born blind and then been made to see. I don't know anything about Jesus, but I'll tell you what, if you see this kind of miracle happening, God must be working through him. And the Pharisees lose their mind. And what they do is they cast this man out of the synagogue. Or to put it another way, those who are called to shepherd God's flock reach into the sheepfold and pull out the sheep and they cast him out of the flock. And then Jesus goes into his teaching about this sheepfold. And right away he says, truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. Then he'll say, the thief comes to steal and kill and destroy. And the whole time he's saying this, I think that he's staring at the Pharisees. And he's saying, look, if you want abundant life offered by God, you must go through the correct door, the legitimate door. And you will never get what you're looking for by following the rules of the Pharisees. There is one way to abundant life. There's one way to a relationship with the Father, and that is through Jesus alone. And the rules of the Pharisees will never get you there. And that's the context, and that's the claim that he's making in that specific moment. But I think we can expand it out a little bit. That he's not just making a claim against the Pharisees. He's showing people how to have access to the one true God. And so when we look at our culture now and we expand it out a little bit more, we live in a culture that wants to be completely inclusive. We live in a culture that wants to say that God is at the top of this mountain and that all other religions, Islam, Mormonism, Judaism, Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism, all of these have their own paths that are right for you that lead you up to God. The problem with this is that if you are a follower of Jesus, you read things like, I am the door, and you read things like, I am the way, and it does not work with this idea of a bunch of paths leading up to the top of the mountain. Jesus is making a claim that says, I exclusively grant access to the Father. If you want to know God, you must go through Jesus. All other religions are illegitimate paths to the Father. There's only one path up that mountain, and Jesus is the gate to that path. To expand it out even further, you cannot find life in a blueberry muffin, right? You cannot find life in a blueberry muffin. The world is going to do everything it can to convince you that it can provide you with the good life. The world is going to do everything it can to convince you that it has the secret to having abundant life, to having the good life, but it's all a facade. It's going to say that contentment is in a bigger house. Contentment is in marriage or in kids. It's going to say that security is in a full bank account and in this investment firm. It's going to say that satisfaction is on your next vacation. This satisfaction is found in going to this restaurant, right? But the problem is that these will always leave us wanting more. They will never satisfy us. The world is built to never satisfy us because it wants you to keep pursuing the next thing. And all of history has shown us this, that there's never anything in this world that can truly bring us full satisfaction, that can bring us abundant life. We can look at all of the athletes out there that they're given these huge contracts and yet they want more. We all see these celebrities who have all the money we could imagine and all the houses and all the cars, and yet we watch them and they're still not full. They're still not satisfied. They're not content. They're hurting and they're in pain, and it's because the things of the world will never bring us contentment. The world offers us a door, and it will only ever lead to dissatisfaction and discontentment. But Jesus offers us a door that leads to access to the Father and to abundant life. So how do we begin to apply a passage like this, a claim like this? He wants you to enter through the door. He wants you to enter through the door every single day. So a minute ago, I talked about the exclusivity of his claim, but now I want to look at the inclusivity of his claim, that Jesus is exclusively inclusive. He's saying, I am the only way. I am the door that leads to the Father. The reality is that he is exclusively the way, and yet he inclusively wants every single person on this globe to walk through that door and experience the Father and experience abundant life. He wants every single person in this room to experience that every day. And so if you have never taken that first step through walking through that door, if you've never walked through that door and said, I want to just have a relationship with God, I would say that today's a great day to begin to look into that, to think through what it looks like to walk through that door and have a relationship with God. Christianity can be often characterized as this old-fashioned rule-following religion, that all it is once I become a Christian, now I have to follow a bunch of rules and I can't do the things that I want to do. What I think we see this morning is that Jesus says, yeah, no, those rules, they're never gonna get you there. But I am the way to abundant life. And so I challenge you with this. Step through the door of a Sobremesa. Sobremesas are the community groups here at Midtown. And I'll say this. If this is your view of Christianity, that it's this rule-following, stuck-up, old-fashioned religion, walk through the door of a Sobremesa. Because here's what I think you'll see when you walk through one of those. I don't think you'll see a bunch of rule followers that are kind of bored and sitting around talking about their rules. I think what you'll find is a bunch of people who are struggling with sickness, who are suffering, who are hurting, who are sinning, but people who are also in the midst of that experiencing abundant life in community, that are experiencing the fullness of life as they walk with Jesus together. It is life-giving to walk with Jesus together. It's not a bunch of rule followers. And so I would challenge you with that, to walk through the door of a Sobremesa. And the other thing is that his claim is conditional. He is granting us access to abundant life, but he's not guaranteeing that we will always experience this abundant life. A few weeks ago, I was starting to read through this passage and study it. And there was one night where it had been a long day and a lot had been going on. And I'm sure that I had probably been impatient with my kids or something like that and snap. But I remember everybody being asleep, and I got downstairs and I sat down and I just thought, this can't be abundant life. This doesn't feel like abundant life. And in that moment, I began to think through and process this, and I realized that this is because I was pursuing life through my own strength and through my own means. I was trying to control and I was trying to do things on my own, and I wasn't turning to the Lord. I wasn't submitting to the Lord. And therefore, what I was experiencing is only a life that I can control and only a life that I could build, and not the abundant life that Jesus offers us. And this is where this claim that I am the door and the claim that I am the good shepherd, this is where they come together. Because the role of a shepherd is to lead the sheep through the door into the sheepfold. And the role of the shepherd is to call the sheep out of the door into the pasture. And the job of the sheep is to submit to the leadership and the guidance of the shepherd. And so what Jesus is calling us is to go into the door and out of the door. We have to submit ourselves daily to the guidance of the good shepherd. So what I want to challenge us to do in application this week, and this is partly an application of this passage and partly to prepare our minds for the good shepherd next week, is to read through every morning this week, Psalm 23. Psalm 23 is this beautiful psalm about the shepherd and the abundant life that the shepherd leads us to. So I challenge you, it takes 2 minutes. Each morning this week, prepare your hearts to submit to the shepherd by reading through Psalm 23. So this morning, we're going to close by reading that psalm. And I want you to just look at what it is that the psalmist is offering, that God is offering us in terms of abundant life. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. This is abundant life. And the good shepherd wants to lead us through the door so that we can daily experience it. Pray with me. Father, we thank you that Jesus came as the door, and that he wants each and every one of us to experience the abundant life that's found in a deep and abiding relationship with you. What a beautiful thing that people like us can experience such a vibrant life through you. Lord, I pray that we would daily make that decision to submit ourselves to you, to walk through that door and find the security, to find the satisfaction, to find the sustenance that only comes through Christ. It's in his name that we pray. Amen.